Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, October 15, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Ron Meniza, is busy preparing for the cyclocross race this weekend. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult your physician. So we're 3 weeks out. So I'm doing pretty well. The surgical incision pain is a lot better. I'm able to sit longer. I have less pain at the local site. I still have numbness and weakness in the leg, but they lead me to understand that that could take a long time to recover because the nerve is angry and they went in there and they messed around and they dug out some calcifications and they took out part of my ligamentum flavum and so that the nerve could be free. And so it's going to take time before that nerve pain calms down. I'm really hoping it does because it's definitely, I still have, definitely have a lot of discomfort and pressure in that leg. I can function. When I saw Tamika, she told me that it was okay for me to get on the bicycle. I could ride on the trainer, but I didn't feel comfortable doing that. When I went to the chiropractor said, no, don't do that. I think it's too soon. It's too much pressure up against your tush and into your spine. I've been sitting a lot at work, which is not wonderful, but I'm able to do that better and with less discomfort. And so this past week, instead of doing all virtual visits, what I did was we called people and offered them virtual. And if they said, I'm not going to come in if it's virtual, we said, okay, you can come in. So I did about half and half. And I've decided that next week, I'm just going to go back to working as normal because when I do virtual visits, I sit more. And it's actually better for me to get up and down. And I'm okay with walking around. And the amount of walking around that I do with physical examination, I can tolerate. And I think it's better for me than the longer sitting that I do when I'm doing virtual visits because there's no physical examination. So we decided that's it. Next week, we're going to just go back to normal. And hopefully that'll work out. If it doesn't work out, we can change our minds. And then later in the week, I'll have to go to virtual. But I've been okay the last 2 days with the mix. Today was an entirely virtual day. Yesterday was about half and half, and I did all right. So med-wise, I'm not taking a lot of stuff. I'm not taking any muscle relaxants. And I'm taking a minimal amount of Tylenol, acetaminophen, maybe a gram a day, and that's it. And, you know, I'm okay with taking more if I need to, but at this point, I don't really think I need to. I'm not icing as often as I could, and I probably should ice more. I probably should ice more frequently, and that I would probably feel good if I did that, but I haven't been as much. But that may mean that I'm getting better. I also went to physical therapy, and I had a lovely young man named Will over at Select and Stores, and he did a great job with me, and he assessed me. And I had been, I tried to do the physical therapy exercises I had done before I had the surgery, and most of them I couldn't do because there was too much pulling and soreness at the incision site. And I'm not ready to twist and I'm not ready to pull on the leg. So like excessive stretching on the leg. Like I did some yoga where I did dragon, where you're putting your leg out and you're basically in a low lunge. And I think it was too much pressure for my leg. So I may not be able to do that particular pose anytime soon. So he gave me exercises that I can do. I have a list of them and it takes me about 20 minutes to do the whole deal. And I'm going to see him a couple more times next week and I'll probably get some different exercises or just he'll evaluate me and that'll be nice. So and when I do the series of exercises that he gave me, I feel better afterwards. I feel more aligned. When I get up in the morning, what I'm noticing is when I lie down for a long time, if I'm in one position for a long time, it's not good. So a lot of sitting today. I'm doing my show and I also saw patients today. So we'll see how that works out. And so getting up and moving around a moderate amount is a good idea. And also going for walks. I did go for a few walks. When I get started on the walks, my legs they're iffy. And I probably went I did a walk that was almost 2 miles long, and the PT said that maybe too much, that I need to back it off a little bit. So tomorrow is the cyclocross race, and I'll be there, and I'll probably be walking around a moderate amount, you know, getting up and getting down. And that's the kind of activity that works for me. So I'm doing that, some very gentle yoga and the PT exercises, and I'm moving along. And there's also a little bit of CBD happening. And that's it. And I never took opioids. And in terms of the pain is actually tolerable, and I'm using the pain as a barometer for what I can do. I mean, while I'm sitting here talking to you, I feel a little sore in my back. It's not, you know, extreme or anything. And a couple weeks ago, like the first week out, I made a show later, almost a week after the surgery, it was too much to sit. And I actually got dizzy and had some symptoms, and that's not happening anymore. So I can sit for longer, but sitting for a long time isn't good for anybody, even if you didn't just have surgery. It's really better to get up and move around regularly, no matter what. So we're moving along. We're just hoping that this nerve pain can resolve. I had a chiropractic appointment, and Dr. Scott worked around the spot. He didn't touch the spot where I had the surgery, and I did feel better after that. I haven't had acupuncture yet. I was going to today, but I moved it out because it's the day before the race and I wanted to be on hand for that. But I'll get acupuncture next week for sure. And maybe sooner, I don't know. I'll decide. But I have a couple PT appointments next week. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I'm taking a lot of anti-inflammatories like fish oil and curcumin and quercetin. And I'm not taking NAC right now because I don't want to increase my glutathione, because glutathione helps you detox out acetaminophen. And I want the acetaminophen on board. So once I'm done with the acetaminophen, we're going to increase our glutathione by taking NAC. Might take actual glutathione, but I'll definitely take NAC, and I'll take vitamin C and make sure I'm getting selenium on board so that I can get my glutathione levels back up, because acetaminophen depletes glutathione. What's glutathione? Glutathione is a marvelous antioxidant that functions in your liver, and it gets rid of a lot of drugs, a lot of metabolites, toxins from the environment, toxins from metabolism from food. It's a very important antioxidant in your body, and one of the things it does metabolize is acetaminophen. And too much acetaminophen isn't good for you. But right now, I've been taking pretty much a gram a day, and that's it. And you're allowed to take up to 4,000. And I've been only, even at my highest, I was only taking 2,100. And that's all I need. And then I took some other stuff too. So I'm looking forward to relaxing this weekend. I mean, tomorrow won't be so relaxing because it's the race. But it should be fun. And you'll hear from Ron on Bicycle Talk about how the race went. And I may contribute to that as well. I decided to make the show a couple days early because we usually make the shows on Monday. And Sunday into Monday, they're predicting a nor'easter. And we don't know if we're going to lose power. So I wanted to get the show made so I didn't have to think about it. And I wanted to do it today rather than Sunday so I could relax on Sunday. All right, and so that's what's going on with me. And Ron he gets really sore. He had an episode of cramping, and we gave him some methylcarbamol. We gave him a muscle relaxant when he was cramping a lot. He decided that he was probably dehydrated, that he's just been so busy, he probably neglected to drink enough water. So now he's being more careful about making sure he was hydrated. When I came home, I felt a little bit dehydrated. And I had watermelon water. So you can get watermelon water at the store, and I find it very hydrating. I actually like it better for immediate hydration than I like coconut water. Coconut water, I haven't been craving it as much. When I drink it, it feels like it's too sweet. And the watermelon water isn't as sweet, and I really like it. I haven't been doing as much electrolytes because I thought they were giving me premature atrial contractions, which I tend to get, although my PACs have gotten much, much better. And I don't know if that's because I had a Lyme flare, or maybe it's because I'm wondering if the cortisone shot made me have more PACs, because what they do is they put they put Depomedrol on board, and it's a depo means it's a they're putting a deposit of a drug that comes out slowly over time, and so probably Depomedrol eventually got used up, and so I don't have the extra cortisone on board, so that's good, and I shouldn't need it as much because, you know, I had the surgery. So let's hope the surgery. I'm just hoping, because if this is what I'm left with, it's not good. And so, but what they assure me is that it's going to take time for the nerve pain to resolve, that nerves take a long time to heal. And, you know, I read something like they heal a millimeter a day, which, boy, that isn't very much. So I'll do things to encourage the nerves to heal, the anti-inflammatories. I might go back to taking benfotiamine, which is a great nerve healer. And benfotiamine is activated vitamin B1, and it's great for lowering blood sugar, and it's also great for nerve healing. I might try to take acetyl-L-carnitine again. I thought that was giving me more palpitations, but I might try it again and see if that happens again, because it's definitely something that's good for nerve healing. So we'll try a couple things and see what works, and you throw it at the wall, see what sticks, right? Okay, so that's what's going on between me and Ron and our health. I'm excited for the fall. We had our first frost. I can't even believe it. It's early October and we had our first frost already. Although the temperature then went up to 60 degrees during the day. So you go from 30 degrees to 60 degrees, it goes up 30 degrees. And that's what it does this time of year sometimes. So I don't know if we're going to have much more freezes like this, but we definitely did. There was frost on the ground this morning. And tonight it's going to get down to the 40s at night. So it's pretty chilly at night. And that's kind of exciting. It's, you know, I don't think we're going to be seeing 70s in the near future, that we're down to the 60s now, and we're going to hang out there for a while, the 50s and 60s, in fact. So I wore long sleeves today. Look at this. Can't even believe it. It's only the second day since April, you know, since the early in the year that I've worn long sleeves for the whole day, although I do have them pushed up. So, all right. So let's talk about some other stuff. Ron has fallen in love with husk cherries. So let me tell you what a husk cherry is, and perhaps you would like to consume a husk cherry. Also known as golden berry. So I don't know. I thought there was another kind of golden berry that's actually a berry. Husk cherries are not a berry. They are a tomato. They're a little tiny tomato. And they are very sweet. They have a flavor profile that's different than tomatoes. They're not as savory as tomatoes. They're much more sweet. And they taste sort of close to cherries. They sort of like a cross between a tomato and a cherry. That's what they taste like. So they're bright orange colored. They're orange yellow colored. And they're related to the tomatillo, which are, those are a little bigger. And so husk cherries are the size of a grape tomato or a small grape. And they're related to tomatillo. Tomatillo is, they're green and they also have a husk. Like tomatillos, they have a little papery husk called a calyx, and you have to remove it before eating. And they're a little bit smaller than cherry tomatoes. They're like the size of grape tomatoes. They have a sweet tropical taste that's true. They do have pineapple notes in them. That is true. It also says mango. I don't know if I agree with that. And you can have them in snacks, salads, sauces, jams. Also known as Inca berry, I guess, when you get your trail mix and it has golden berry in it, that's what this is. It's also known as Peruvian ground cherry, poa berry, golden berry, husk cherry, and Cape gooseberry. They belong to the nightshade family. They're a tomato, that's what I'm saying. And they grow in warm places around the world, but people grow them here in stores. That's where we're getting them. The article tells, so this will tell you all about your golden berries. So they're very nutritious. They have an impressive nutrient profile. A cup has 74 calories in a cup, and that's mostly from carbohydrate. And a cup has 6 grams of fiber, which is over 20% of the reference daily intake. And you get 74 calories and 15 grams of carbs, 6 grams of fiber, a little bit of protein and fat, and there's a little tiny bit of fat in them, 21% of your RDA for C, a little bit of thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, a little bit of vitamin A, and a little bit of iron and phosphorus. And then they have a lot of beta carotene and vitamin K with a little bit of calcium. So they're very high in antioxidants. Antioxidants protect against repair and damage caused by free radicals that are related to aging and diseases. And there are 34 unique compounds that have been studied in golden berries that have benefits for health. And the phenolics in golden berries are shown to block the growth of breast and colon cancer cells in test tube studies. And then there was another test tube study where they got extracts of fresh and dehydrated golden berries. They're found to increase the life of cells while protecting formation of compounds that cause oxidative damage. The skin has nearly three times the amount of antioxidants as the pulp, and the antioxidant levels are at their peak when the fruits are ripe. The compounds in golden berries are called withanolides. So the withanolides, guess what else has withanolides in it? Yep, you guessed it. It's withania. What's withania? That is ashwagandha. So the withanolides, So the withanolides are anti-inflammatory. They can help to protect against colon cancer. There was an extract of the husk of golden berries that was seen to reduce inflammation in mice with inflammatory bowel disease. And mice with the extract had lower inflammatory markers in their tissues. But there aren't comparable studies, but there's promising effects against inflammation. They might boost immunity. The studies in human cells note that golden berries may help regulate your immune system. They have a lot of polyphenols, which block the release of certain inflammatory immune markers, and they're a good source of vitamin C. A cup will give you 15 milligrams of vitamin C, which is good for your immune system. They might help with bone health because there's vitamin K in them, which helps with bone metabolism. Vitamin K is a necessary part of bone and cartilage and involved in healthy bone turnover rates. Most recent evidence shows that K should be taken with vitamin D for your optimal bone health. Golden berries have lutein, which is really good for your eyes, and also has beta carotene with other carotenoids. When you get a lot of carotenoids from your produce, it's linked to a lower risk of age-related macular degeneration, which is which causes blindness. And lutein is well known for preventing eye diseases. There's also zeaxanthin and lycopene, which also prevent against vision loss from diabetes. Golden berries could be poisonous if you eat them when they're unripe. So don't eat them when they're unripe. Because they have too much solanine. When solanine is an alkaloid that's found in nightshade vegetables, so you're supposed to let them ripen. And so you make sure they're that beautiful golden yellow color. So make sure they're fully ripe and they have no green parts. And if you eat too much golden berry overall, that can be dangerous. If you have a very high dose of freeze-dried golden berries, like 5,000 milligrams per kilogram a day, you could get heart damage in mice. So if you have a handful of golden berries or a few in your salad, or you have a snack and it's a handful, don't worry about it. And just make sure they're ripe. And how can you eat them? You could eat them raw as a snack. You could put them in a fruit salad. You can put them in a savory salad. You could put them in a smoothie. You can put them in chocolate sauce for dessert. You can put them in meat or fish in a sauce. You can make jam out of them. You can put them in a grain salad or put them on top of yogurt or granola. They're closely related to tomatillos. They have a sweet tropical taste, kind of like pineapple mango. Maybe mango, definitely pineapple. I agree with the pineapple part. They have fiber, vitamins, minerals, lots of plant compounds that boost your immune system, eyesight, and bones. And you should eat them fully ripe. Make sure there's no green spots. And they have a unique sweet taste that's great for desserts, jams, and sauces. Maybe even part of your matcha latte. I don't know. I don't know if I'd do that. I had a matcha latte the other day. I had somebody make me a matcha latte. I went to the Good Times Cafe. Because Silk City was open. I didn't know it. But yeah, Silk City opened in Willimantic. But anyway, I didn't know that. So I went to Good Times. I like to go to both places. I like to support both establishments. Anyway, so the nice man who owns Good Times made me a matcha latte with coconut milk. And I told him, put some cardamom in it. Because cardamom is really good for you. And I've talked about the health benefits of cardamom before. I don't know if I liked it so much with the cardamom. It was okay. But I like a green tea latte just with a little bit sweet and alternative milk and with some cinnamon on it. Either plain like that with a little bit sweet and that's it. Or I like to also have a little vanilla in it and some cinnamon. And that's it. That's what I'm finding. Although sometimes I'll go to one of the cafes and they'll do a frothy fruity top, a frothy flavor top. And I'll do that sometimes because you can get them dairy free. All right. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was some things regarding breast cancer. It's October, so it's National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I wanted to talk about that. And, you know, I'm in my 6-month waiting period to find out if a lesion. Lesion's not suspicious. It's just they want to double check it. When they looked at it by ultrasound, they said, we're not really concerned about it, but we want to make sure it doesn't change. And so in February, I have to go back and have another ultrasound and mammogram and have it looked at. So I wanted to talk about some things regarding breast cancer, what we do for, you know, complementary and alternative medicine does for breast cancer. So complementary and alternative medicine treatments can help with breast cancer. You can explore different treatment methods to help to supplement traditional medicine. You can do acupuncture, detox diets, traditional Chinese medicine, take antioxidants. And some people use the complementary alternative medicine to help with side effects of treatment to relieve pain and remove and improve quality of life. Some treatments are effective. There's some question about the safety of some of them. So here's some things that you can basically do. Eating a healthy diet won't hurt you no matter what you do, whether you are taking, whether you're doing chemotherapy or radiation or getting surgery. When you eat as healthfully as possible, that's not going to be dangerous to you in any way. It's only going to be good for you. Some people with breast cancer start on a special diet instead of taking drugs. It's a good idea to avoid foods that are super high fat. So when I say high fat, I'm talking about poor quality fat. I'm talking about, you don't want to be eating deep fried French fries or fried chicken, things like that. But if you had a stir fry that was sauteed in olive oil, that would be fine, or an avocado oil. Or if you put good quality oil on your salad, that's fine. But so we're talking about super high fatty things. Like if you're going to have some really good quality bread, you want to put a little bit of organic butter on it. You don't want anything absolutely soaked in butter. Consider not doing salt cured stuff or smoked things or pickled things, apparently. And I don't know if that's because of the nitrates that come out in it. Those are not good for cancer. But also double up on fruits, vegetables, and plant-based foods altogether. So, because, why? Because there's a few reasons. One, when you eat plant-based foods, they have a lot of antioxidants in them, and antioxidants help with healthy gene expression. And what you want is, what cancer is, it's unhealthful gene expression. So when you take antioxidants, you promote healthy gene expression. And so fruits and vegetables are going to help with that. The other thing you do when you eat fruits and vegetables is you have wonderful prebiotics that go into your colon and they make it so you have beneficial bacteria. Beneficial bacteria have all kinds of immune properties and they can help to be protective against cancer and provide antioxidants and provide vitamins and strengthen your immune system that way. You'll also detox better. So there are compounds in the environment that have cause oxidative stress. And if you eat foods that encourage you to have good flow through your colon, you're going to have regular bowel movements and your liver is going to work well and you're not going to hold on to a lot of the toxins in the environment. So eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nuts and seeds are going to help with that. All right. So you can take antioxidant supplements. So what I would encourage you to do, thing is when I have somebody come in who has cancer and especially breast cancer, when they come in, they want to know what else can I take to help protect me. One of the things they have to do is they have to talk to their doctor, whoever, if they're doing traditional, you know, conventional treatment. So if they're doing tamoxifen or Arimidex, if they're doing tamoxifen is a SERM, it's an estrogen moderating compound, and Arimidex or anastrozole. And there's a couple of strazoles. Anyway, anastrozole is it prevents your body from turning the estrogen or the androgens in your body into estrogen. So you have less of an estrogen burden because the estrogen is proliferative to cancer cells. So anastrozole and letrozole they do that. when you consume a lot of fruits and vegetables, then you are going to tend to excrete more of the estrogen through your stool. That's one of the mechanisms by which you excrete estrogen. And estrogen, what happens is when you make estrogen in your body, and we all have estrogen in your body, even if you're postmenopausal, there's estrogen stores in many of the organs in the fat tissue in your body. So you're going to excrete more of it if you eat fruits and vegetables, especially if you eat cruciferous vegetables, because they contain I3C, which especially encourages the excretion of extra estrogen. So do flax seeds. Flax seeds have lignans that do that, as well as sesame seeds. And sesame seeds includes tahini. So tahini is sesame butter. You make, you know, peanut butter, right? Well, you take sesame seeds and you mush them up and you get tahini, sesame butter. And so that's going to help you excrete your extra estrogen. So you have less estrogen on board to encourage breast cancer cells to grow anywhere in your body. So the thing is, you have to talk to your doctor. If you're going to take supplements, you have to talk to your doctor. Always encourage them to talk to their oncologist, whatever treatment you're doing. If you're doing chemo, if you're doing radiation, if you're doing letrozole or anastrozole, or if you're doing tamoxifen, or which is also tamoxifen. If you're doing one of those drugs, you want to talk to your doctor about if they are okay with you doing complementary therapies. I have a bunch of studies that show that when you take antioxidants along with chemotherapy and radiation, for the most part, they enhance the effects of them, that they are truly complementary. But some doctors think, well, we're trying to destroy cells, so we're trying to create oxidative damage to cells to destroy them. So if you take antioxidants, that's going to make it less likely to destroy the cells. And what I've always said, especially with radiation, if you take a carrot, now carrots super high in beta carotene, right? And beta carotene is an excellent antioxidant. What do you think would happen if you take an intense radiation beam that you would use for cancer treatment and pointed it at a carrot? Do you think the carrot would protect itself because it has so much beta carotene? No, the carrot would burn. So when they do radiation therapy, you have marks on you. They mark out areas on your skin that they're going to stay within, and they do a very circumscribed area for the radiation. So the thing, what you really want is you want the radiation to hit the cancer cells. If there's any tumors or potential cancer cells, you want the radiation to very specifically hit that area. What you don't want is collateral damage. And so when you take a lot of antioxidants, it protects you from getting the collateral damage. And, you know, there's all kinds of structures that could be around the cancer cells, like nerves and muscles and fatty tissue that can be damaged. And you don't want those to be damaged. The only place you want damaged is potential or existing tumors. So my thinking, I've always gone by the idea that taking antioxidants along with radiation and chemotherapy is helpful. But again, I don't want to go against what anybody's oncologist says. And so you have to talk it over with your oncologist and decide what you want to do. So antioxidants that can be helpful, beta carotene, lycopene, which we talked about in the golden berries. Lycopene is high in anything that's a tomato. So it's especially high in tomato sauce. So when you cook a tomato, any sort of tomato, whether it's a golden berry, whether it's a tomatillo, or it's a regular old tomato, you will get lycopene from a fresh tomato, but you get more. And that's true of carotenoids in general. That's why people ask me, should I only eat a raw food diet? And I say, no, my preference is no, because there are certain compounds and enzymes you're going to get from eating raw foods, but then there's certain compounds that are more bioavailable from cooking the foods, and carotenoids are that way. So in order to get into the carotenoids that are in leaves or that are in other produce that are brightly colored, you have to cook them. You have to distress the cell walls, because we can't break into cell walls. We don't have cellulase in our bodies like ruminants do, herbivores and rabbits and squirrels and things. They have cellulase in their bodies that break down cell walls of plants. We do not. So in order to get into those wonderful vitamins and minerals, the leaves and the produce have to be distressed. And a good way to distress them is to cook them or puree them. And so when you have tomato sauce or ketchup or pizza and anything or tomato juice, where the tomatoes have been heated up a great deal, the beta carotene and the lycopenes are more bioavailable. So it's a good idea to eat raw. It's also a good idea to eat cooked. So beta carotene, lycopene, vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E can all be helpful. You can get antioxidants in things like goji berries. And I'm a fan of the goji berries. I prefer to put goji berries in my oatmeal and over my yogurt rather than raisins, although both might be nice as well. Wild blueberries. Blueberries are an excellent source of antioxidant. Wild blueberries, they're purple inside. They're smaller, so you're eating more skin. And remember, we said that the skin has more antioxidants than the golden berry. Well, that's true of the blueberries too. So because when you eat the same volume of blueberries for the European big ones versus the small wild ones, you're eating more skin. So you're getting more purple. Get more purple, you get more anthocyanins, you get more antioxidants. Then there's dark chocolate. And dark chocolate, if you're going to eat dark chocolate with sugar, have only a couple of squares a day. If you're having chocolate that has no sugar in it, have at it. Cacao nibs and raw organic chocolate powder, cocoa powder. That makes sure it's not alkalized, it's not Dutched, and then you're going to get the wonderful flavanols and antioxidants from chocolate. Pecans are high in bioflavonoids, and I forgot this. I wasn't eating pecans as much for no good reason, and then I read about how they are really high in flavonoids, and they're really good for antioxidants, and I don't eat them as often as I should. All right, tonight I'm going to have pecans. I have some cinnamon-covered pecans, and I have some plain ones to go in my salad. I'm going to go munch on some after I talk to you. Kidney beans have a lot of antioxidants. Who knew? It's the color in them, that deep red color, antioxidants. You can also get antioxidants in supplements. And as I was telling you, the research is mixed on whether you should be taking them during cancer treatment. You should talk to your oncologist and you should talk to, you should make a decision that way. So supplements possibly can interact with prescription drugs. They contain contaminated synthetic prescription drugs. So you have to know, you have to get a really good source. And if you go to a naturopath or a really good health food store, they're going to tend not to have that. And can also contain contaminants. But again, if you're getting a high quality supplement from a good health food store or from a practitioner, that shouldn't be the case. And there can be complications. So you want to have caution. So mind-body therapies are a great thing to do. Anything you do that reduces stress, that reduces cortisol. Remember, what's cortisol's deal? Cortisol causes inflammation. It runs around your body, looks for stuff to break down, turn into sugar so you can run away from the bear. When you have sugar, what happens? Your insulin goes up, and insulin stimulates inflammatory compounds, including IGF-1, which you don't want to have a lot of when you have cancer. So you don't want to eat a lot of sugar when you have cancer, and you don't want to have a lot of cortisol because that puts sugar into your blood. And so when you do things that access your ventral vagus nerve, calm you down, you're going to have less cortisol around, and you're going to have an increase in the activity of your immune system, and you're going to have better healing. I should take a note from this because I have not been resting enough, and that would help my nerve healing more. So there's lots of things you can do for mind-body therapies. You can do art therapy. You can paint and draw and stuff. You can do music therapy, which can just mean listening to music. It can be singing, and you don't have to have talent. You could bang on a triangle or a drum or pick at a piano or play on a xylophone or play with a recorder. If you have musical talent, by all means, have at it. And you can sing. And, you know, as they say in Zimbabwe, if you can walk, you can dance. If you can talk, you can sing. So whatever comes out of you, it's fine. And then there's aromatherapy. Smelling certain scents can help to reduce your stress. Things like lavender is a great calming scent. If that's not your favorite, you can find one that is. There are so many different essential oils. One of my staff, Tina, she's very much into essential oils, and she has a little diffuser that she will use in the office. And today I walked in and it smelled really good in her office. And she said, it's rosemary. I'm like, oh, rosemary is great because it smells really good. It's healing. It's anti-inflammatory. It has antioxidants in it. And eating rosemary, by the way, is very good for you too. It really has great antioxidants in it. That's something you can eat while you're dealing with cancer. So aromatherapy can be helpful. Meditation, you're just sitting there or lying there and breathing, and you can have a mantra, you can say one word, you can do a silent meditation, you can do yoga nidra, which is a progressive relaxation, you can do guided meditation. All that matters is that you're doing deep breathing and you're relaxing so that you can lower your cortisol and increase the activity of your immune system. Yoga, any form of yoga that works for you, probably not excessively active yoga, but, you know, more mindful yoga that's a little bit slower, definitely yin and restorative and somatic yoga, and yoga nidra, which is that's a still yoga. That's where you're doing, it's just a guided meditation, and also kundalini yoga, which is mostly still with a lot of breathing and meditation. You could walk in a labyrinth. Now, I have a friend who has a labyrinth in his backyard. If you can find a labyrinth near you, it might be worth looking into. But walking through a labyrinth can be very peaceful. The thing that you can get this time of year is sometimes there's corn mazes. So you could, that can count as your labyrinth. So if you find a corn maze near you, it's very relaxing to walk in a corn maze. The thing with a labyrinth, it's different than a corn maze, because a corn maze, of course, the corn is towering over you. Whereas a labyrinth is, there's stones or some kind of a path that's set up on the ground and you can see all around you. You just walk through the path. But that's very relaxing too. You can get Reiki, and Reiki, there are Reiki practitioners all around, and often there are Reiki practitioners that participate. They often volunteer or get paid and work in hospitals. So you can get Reiki. It's very gentle. It's just an energy medicine. You can also do Tai Chi, which is an ancient martial art that is where you're moving slowly and mindfully, depending. Well, Tai Chi, what people don't realize is that Tai Chi, there are various forms of Tai Chi, and there are forms of Tai Chi that are more aggressive and peaceful. Usually when you see people doing Tai Chi very peacefully out in the park, they're usually doing the Yang form. And the Yang form is very gentle, very mindful, has very fluid movement. And, you know, when I was studying it years ago, that's what we studied. And I learned the first and second paragraphs of the Yang form. So that's generally what people teach. The therapies target your mind, body, and spirit with meditative techniques, creative activities, and getting help from a practitioner can certainly be helpful. And there's research that shows that mind-body therapies are helpful at relieving stress, anxiety, and pain, but you still have to do your treatment plan. Massage therapy, straight up massage therapy, helps immunity, eases anxiety, pain, fatigue, and that in women with breast cancer, massage therapy helped reduce not only anxiety and pain, but also the need for pain medication. There was another study that showed that massage therapy and progressive muscle relaxation helped to increase protective white blood cells with stage 1 and 2 breast cancer. So if you'd like to incorporate massage therapy in your routine, it's good to find a licensed practitioner who can work around sensitive areas. Then there's acupuncture, one of my favorites. Traditional Chinese medicine can help you with your symptoms of breast cancer and side effects of treatment. It requires a practitioner to put sterile needles into acupuncture points, specific points on your body, and it's shown that it can help to relieve fatigue, control hot flashes, which can happen when you're having chemotherapy or you're on estrogen blocking medications like the anastrozole and the tamoxifen. And also can reduce vomiting. So if you have chemotherapy, you're more likely to have vomiting and nausea. It can help with that as well, and also reduce pain. Acupuncture, there's a risk of infection and bleeding. And it's true that sometimes when Nicole puts needles in me, I release a little blood, but it's not a big deal. It's a tiny bit, and she does a little cotton ball and I'm done. And the needles are sterile, so it's very unlikely that you're going to get an infection. I mean, it's a risk, but if you don't have a great immune system, that can be a risk as well. It says here that acupuncture, you can risk getting lymphedema. But I would think that acupuncture is something that can help with lymphedema, that's more likely to happen if one of the things that happened to you is when you had your breast cancer, if you had to have a mastectomy and they found positive lymph nodes and they had to take some lymph nodes, then you don't have as good lymphatic flow and you're more likely to get lymphedema, and acupuncture is something that can help with that. And so can lymphatic drainage massage. And then there's some practitioners that do herbal supplements, Chinese medical treatments. But this suggests that people with chemotherapy shouldn't use herbal supplements because they're known to reduce the effect. And I don't entirely agree with that, because there are studies that show that some some herbal supplements can be helpful. They're complementary to chemotherapy. So it depends on what it is. It depends on what the studies say for that specific compound. And also you have to talk it over with your oncologist and make a decision that way. So biofeedback is interesting. It helps to treat the side effects of chemotherapy. And biofeedback, you get hooked up to electrical sensors that monitor changes in your body and can help you gain power over your body so you can control your muscle tension, your heart rate, your blood pressure. And the Mayo Clinic recommends something called Respirate, which is a biofeedback device that's approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And you should be careful about stuff that's marketed for at-home use. On the other hand, if you have a practitioner that you know about and that's highly recommended and you get good results, then that's fine. So a traditional treatment for breast cancer can be treated with the following: with surgery, with radiation, with chemotherapy, hormone therapy, and targeted therapy. So surgery and radiation are local therapies because they treat the cancer cells without affecting the rest of your body. And they're the most effective, of course, in the earlier stages of breast cancer. Chemotherapy, hormone therapy, and targeted therapy are systemic because they go all over your body. And systemic therapies go into your blood either orally or by injection, and they reach tumors that have spread through your body. And they're more effective in advanced stages of cancer. Chemotherapy can cause side effects that can last months or years after the therapy is ended, and the stage and type of breast cancer can determine the type of treatment plan that you're offered, of course. So if you have stage 1 or stage 0, you may only need surgery. And it depends on the doctor whether they might want you to have some post-operative therapies like a drug like tamoxifen or Arimidex or, you know, anastrozole. You talk with your doctor before you begin any alternative therapies. Your doctor can tell you if the complementary and alternative therapies are effective for your stage of cancer and steer you away from fraudulent products and tell you what research is available on various complementary alternative treatments and about their safety. Doctor can also write you a referral recommendation for an appropriate treatment, and then you can make an informed decision. This article is saying don't use this in place of conventional treatment, and I have to say, if I had breast cancer, I would certainly be looking at all of my options, and I'd be weighing which, if any, conventional treatments I would be doing. Let's hope that doesn't happen, but it could happen. And so many major insurers cover some complementary treatments, some don't. And there can be out-of-pocket cost. So that's what complementary and alternative stuff you can do with breast cancer. And here are some supplements that are recommended for breast cancer or that are talked about in breast cancer. So vitamins and dietary supplements can help you get the micronutrients your body needs to stay strong during cancer diagnosis. But you have to talk. You should always talk to your practitioner. If you're going to do some complementary alternative stuff, you want to talk with your oncologist about what's going on. Many supplements are safe to take during treatment and recovery, but not all products are appropriate or recommended. So there are essential vitamins that are helpful for breast cancer. You really want your vitamin D to be optimized. It's good for maintaining bone health, supporting immune function, absorbing calcium, which you need for bones and teeth. Your doctor may recommend taking vitamin D because certain breast cancer treatments can promote bone loss and increase your risk for osteoporosis. And that when you have higher vitamin levels of vitamin D, it can reduce the chance breast cancer will spread and have metastasis. There's a study from 2016 found that vitamin D deficiency increased the risk of breast cancer's spread or metastasis. It also helps to support mental health function and may help reduce symptoms of anxiety or depression for people with cancer diagnosis. Vitamin C, it can be obtained through your diet. It's a vitamin and an antioxidant. Your body doesn't make it. Vitamin D, your body produces vitamin D, but if you tend to be lower in vitamin D, you might be encouraged to take it if you have a breast cancer diagnosis. Vitamin C, you have to eat. We don't make vitamin C. There are animals that do. I think rabbits do. But we do not synthesize vitamin D in our bodies. And it's an antioxidant, helps to protect you from free radicals. There's research that suggests that vitamin C can be a great supportive therapy in breast cancer. There's a study that showed that when you do it intravenously, it had great anti-inflammatory and anti-cancer benefits without interfering with treatments and some chemotherapy agents. Other research cautions against using it, particularly during chemotherapy. There was a large clinical trial that found that participants taking A, C, and E before and after chemotherapy were more likely to have a recurrence of cancer. Oh boy. Research is attributed to antioxidants promoting cell repair even in cancer cells. That's the concern. And so there's a study that bears that out. So how you get the vitamin C, when you get vitamin C from food sources, not vitamin C in supplements, was associated with reduced breast cancer risk and mortality. So if you're actually being actively treated, you have to talk it over with your oncologist. But it might be better to get the vitamin C from food. Where are you going to get the vitamin C from? Yes, you're going to get it from citrus, grapefruit, lemon, lime. You're going to get it from kiwi. Know how sour kiwis are? Well, they're a good source of vitamin C. So are strawberries. So are lots of vegetables. So peppers. All the peppers are great sources of vitamin C. So are Brussels sprouts and broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables. You can get vitamin C from, and pretty much any fruit is going to get you some vitamin C. Tomatoes have vitamin C in them. Apples, pears, most fruits, especially if they have any tart compound to them, they are higher in vitamin C. But strawberries and kiwi and citrus are particularly high in vitamin C. So are black currants. They are high in vitamin C too. Any of your berries are going to have some vitamin C in them. Then there's the B vitamins. Each of the B vitamins have specific functions, and they work together to maintain your neurological function, energy, cell metabolism, and the effectiveness of B vitamins during cancer treatment varies across different cancer types. B6, B9, which is folate, and B12 may have protective features that can reduce nerve pain from chemo treatments. B12 in a 2019 clinical research study was shown that there was a higher rate of breast cancer recurrence and increased mortality in chemotherapy treatment. So maybe don't take extra B12 when you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, that you want to get it from your food. Then there's minerals. Calcium in combination with D can be an important part of maintaining bone health during cancer treatment. It's also important to process in your body for muscle contraction, nerve communication, blood pressure, and blood clotting. There are some preliminary studies, human and animal, that suggest that calcium may reduce a person's risk for breast cancer. But there's more research is needed. And it's if you have adequate calcium, it's not going to necessarily completely prevent breast cancer, but it might reduce your risk. Selenium is a trace mineral. Your body needs very tiny amounts for good function. It's an antioxidant. It's part of glutathione that we talked about before. You need selenium to help you convert your T4 to T3 in your thyroid. And there's a 10-year survival rate in breast cancer found that they were significantly better with people with higher selenium levels. And that more studies are recommended to study selenium supplementation. Zinc is a trace mineral that's involved in proper enzyme function, helps your body regulate a lot of physiological reactions. It supports your immune function and wound healing, also has antioxidant properties, supports hormonal balance. And in breast cancer, zinc pathways are investigated as potential therapeutic targets in emerging therapies. Imbalance in zinc levels in the body may contribute to tumor growth, but that doesn't mean that when you take zinc, it's going to make you more likely to have cancer. Omega-3 fatty acids, they're a type of fat, which you hear me talk about all the time. They're used for your body for a lot of functions. They promote immune function and can help reduce inflammation. And there's studies from just a couple years ago, EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, and docosahexaenoic acid, hexaenoic acid, DHA, which are two very active omega-3 fatty acids, may help reduce chemotherapy side effects and improve overall breast cancer survival rates. You can get omega-3s from foods like fish, walnut, soy, and flaxseed, and you can also take supplements. There are doses. The doses vary depending on your age and your gender, but usually under 1.5 grams a day. Exceeding 3 grams a day can increase your risk of adverse reactions like diarrhea and stomach upset and stuff like that. Omega-3 fatty acid supplements were also noted in the large clinical trial research from 2019 as associated with increased risk of cancer recurrence and mortality during chemotherapy treatment. So you might not want to take the omega-3s during your chemotherapy. So if you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, you want to discuss your supplements with your doctor or your breast cancer specialist. That includes supplements you're currently on, vitamins and supplements you're considering taking. The research on using vitamins and supplements is mixed. The current guidelines advise caution when using these products during breast cancer treatment. Certain vitamins and dietary supplements can affect how well cancer treatments work, and too high doses can have negative side effects. So the takeaway is you may be able to take supplements. You definitely want to talk it over with your oncologist and make sure that your oncologist sometimes will know this one is helpful. It enhances this treatment and this one is not good for it. Some people will tell you no supplements at all. And that all depends on what you want to do and what you agree upon with your treatment team. And definitely, you know, discuss the pros and cons with your team. Okay, so curcumin and green tea. So curcumin, it's the results are mixed. I think of curcumin and green tea as something you take preventatively, that if you have curcumin and green tea on board and you don't have cancer, you're less likely to get it in the first place. There are some cancers where it does improve outcomes. And then in terms of whether you should take them, green tea for breast cancer patients. So it's known to have several benefits for the body. It's, of course, originated in China and Asian countries, in Japan and India. It's made from the unfermented leaves of Camellia sinensis. And traditional Eastern doctors use green tea for gas, regulate body temperature, good digestion, overall health. It has a lot of antioxidants that are thought to be promote health, especially the polyphenols like EGCG. Which is epigallocatechin 3-gallate. And green tea also has caffeine and theanine. And I love my theanine. L-theanine is a very calming amino acid. There's no specific evidence that green tea is effective in treating cancer, but there's evidence that shows that green tea may reduce the risk of developing certain cancers in people. So that's what I'm saying. If you have green tea on board, you're less likely to get cancer in the first place. And people with cancer tend to drink it because it boosts the immune system, may treat cancer if nothing else is working. It helps detoxification. The polyphenols are good for liver detoxification and stimulating liver activity. It can improve your energy levels. You can make it in pre-made bags or loose, or you can do matcha, which is the powder. Steep it in water, boiled to 180 degrees for two or three minutes. Drink it while it's hot. In terms of how often, manufacturers recommend having between 3 and 5 cups a day, which is a lot. I would not be able to do that. That's way too much caffeine. Each cup has about 28 milligrams. And if you're really sensitive to caffeine, that's going to be, having a bunch of cups of those is going to be too much. In many countries, manufacturers sell green tea as an herbal supplement. It's usually safe to drink, but you have to be careful of the caffeine. It can make you jittery. It can also upset some people's stomachs. And for me, it depends on what's going on. If I'm eating well, green tea isn't going to bother me. If I've been eating too much sweets and maybe some gluten and dairy, I might have green and black tea are more likely to bother me. So green tea is something that you can partake in while you have cancer. Again, you should talk to your practitioner. All right, so the next thing, I don't have a lot of time left, but we'll get started on monounsaturated fats. So let's talk about that for a minute. Monounsaturated fats are found in olive oil, avocados, certain nuts, and they're healthy. They may include helping with weight loss, reducing your risk of heart disease. So monounsaturated fats, also known as MUFAs, that's the acronym, they include oleic acid, palmitoleic acid, and vaccinic acid. Never heard of vaccinic acid. There are a lot of foods that are high in healthy unsaturated fats, like mono and polyunsaturated. Most consist of a combination of fats, healthy and unhealthy. Few foods contain only one type of fat. Foods that have unsaturated fats are typically liquid at room temperature, like olive oil. The high saturated fats are typically solid at room temperature. So monounsaturated fats have been studied as possibly helping with weight loss. And I'm big on the monounsaturated fats. Olive oil goes on the salad. Anytime I eat the salad, I get the olive oil. And I eat a fair bit of nuts and seeds, so I'm getting my monounsaturates that way. And I do some dark chocolate. Ron has me eating, whenever we have a salad, I have half of a small avocado. So I'm getting my monounsaturates that way. And on my yogurt and also on my oatmeal, I put cacao nibs. So I'm going to get monounsaturates that way. If you change the amount of fat in your diet, you can reduce your calorie intake. But with moderate amounts of monounsaturated fats, you can still help with weight loss if you're in a calorie deficit. So swapping your saturated for monounsaturated can help you burn more fat and reduce body fat, especially abdominal fat. So olives and olive oil are helpful for possible fat loss. I try to push my patients to check out the monounsaturated fats. Eat your MUFAs. There's evidence that suggests that increasing MUFAs in your diet can reduce your risk of heart disease, especially if you're replacing saturated fat. So the American Heart Association wants you to replace your saturated and trans fats with unsaturated fats. Unsaturated fats are a big part of the Mediterranean diet. What do we know about the Mediterranean diet? Mediterranean diet, they have the lowest risk of a lot of illnesses, including cardiovascular disease and cancer. So monounsaturated fats can help to reduce your levels of LDL, your low-density lipoprotein, the so-called bad cholesterol. No cholesterol is really bad. I don't believe that. And increasing your levels of high-density cholesterol, your HDL. So some people, I'll tell them, they really have a hard time making HDL. Have them do a shot of good quality olive oil every day. Again, I just mentioned it, the Mediterranean diet. Monounsaturated fat from olive oil is a big component of it, and there are a lot of aspects of this dietary pattern that are really good for cardiovascular health. There was a review of randomized trials suggesting that monounsaturated fat-rich food can help control your blood lipid levels, and it has to be studied more. Talk with your doctor or a dietitian or a naturopath to help change your diet for more monounsaturated fats. All right, that's all we have time for. I will continue talking about the monounsaturated fats the next time I make a show. But for now, I have to let you go because it's time. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.